It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What, Num?
Tottenham.
Don't be a Clottenham.
You want goals?
Tottenham's got the...
Tottenham. I'm saying Tottenham very, very often.
Hot shot. Give them all you got.
Let me make it plain. Tottenham are the kings. The kings of White Hart Lane.
Top 10 Tottenham.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Top 10 Tottenham. Thank you so much for joining us. Wherever you are around the world, I'm so glad you seem to be enjoying these. Light relief from the current shit show that is Tottenham Hotspur. Joining me tonight, so lovely, thrilled. He's made it so busy. It's been so difficult to get him on the Spurs show proper every week, especially during the season. So it's wonderful we've managed to get him for Top 10 Tottenham. It's the Tottenham Hotspur correspondent from football.london, Alistair Gold. How are you, Alistair?
I'm good. Thank you very much. It's an absolute pleasure to be here and also to talk about something that isn't Tottenham Hotspur manager related. It's wonderful.
Exactly. I know it is. And as we recalled that, and I don't know when this is going out, but as we recalled this, we still have no idea. I don't think the club have a clue either. But let's not get depressed talking about that. What I like about your top 10 picks, there's some greatest hits in there. And there's a few here I'm thinking, oh, this, I have no idea why he's put this one down. So I'm really fascinated. The first one is one of those. And this was one of the games I could not find any footage from. Maybe it is out there. Maybe it does exist. I couldn't find it. It's August the 31st, 2002. It finished Tottenham Hotspur 2, Southampton 1. Les Ferdinand and Teddy Sheringham scored with a penalty. Why is that one in there?
Yeah, sorry to be so awkward, my very first one. But that is, it's an utterly personal choice, that one. Yeah. And that's purely because it was kind of, sounds awful to say, but the first and only time I was able to actually take my dad to a Tottenham Hotspur match.
Right.
He'd, as a kid, had always taken me to White Hart Lane and everything. And then in 2002, I was kind of at the age where I was able to actually splash out a bit and take him on his birthday. Mm. And this was the game we chose. And my dad was a bit of an older boy. He was in his late 50s when he had me. So he was, God, I think he was 78 when we went to see this match. And we got the very, you know, when I say I had money, I didn't have a lot. So we could only get the very back row in the south stand, absolute top. And he had to climb all the way up there. But as a match, it wasn't particularly remarkable. It was, I think, probably the biggest thing about it was that Robbie Keane was unveiled that day.
Right, okay.
That
okay.
was the day he was unveiled right. after signing. So yeah. we got to see the new signing, obviously got to score Teddy, see Teddy scoring a penalty in front of us and everything. But it was just lovely just to be with my dad. Because not long after that, he moved up to Scotland with my mum. They went up there because right. she's from Scotland. He had a stroke.
Could they get any further away from you?
Well, you know, there's probably easier ways of doing that. But yeah, no, they say headed off to another country just to get away from me. But then unfortunately, after a couple of years up there, he had a stroke, had dementia, and then we lost him in 2010. So for me, In terms of Tottenham matches, that's the last one, obviously, I had sitting alongside him in the South Stand, cheering the team on. Pre-journalism days, just purely being a fan alongside him. And it's always got a little bit of a special place. I mean, White Hart Lane was always that for me back in the day. You know, walking up the steps from the concourse, seeing that green grass. And I used to say this, when the new stadium was being built, the new stadium was always going to be something a little bit personal for me, because I kind of, as we all did, saw it being constructed. But for me, White Hart Lane was my childhood. It was seeing that grass as you went up the steps and just getting those hairs on the back of your neck going up. And yeah, and I think I always associate it with my dad. So that's kind of what I wanted to kick off, really, with one just kind of being a little kind of note to him, really.
That's very nice. When did you first go? When did he start taking you? How old were you?
Oh, do you know the weirdest thing? My first ever match, and I don't know if I've said this before or not, was actually, we had an Arsenal fan in the family.
Right.
And we were taken, despite being Tottenham fans, we were taken to the League Cup final against Luton at Wembley. Yeah.
Well, that was a fun one.
Well, this was the problem. It was my first match. And as big kind of Tottenham fans, we were actually sat in the Arsenal end at Wembley.
Oh, even sweeter.
And I remember getting told off by my father because I may have slightly celebrated when Luton scored. And I think that probably set me up for kind of what was to come with Tottenham, was that, yeah, that was actually my first game. It was not a Tottenham game. It was laughing at the expense of Arsenal. And obviously, you swiftly realise as you get older, that just comes around and bites you because you end up getting laughed at just as much. But yeah, that was my first one. I can't even remember the year that was, but I probably wasn't too old, but
I'm trying to remember when they lost to them. Is it the late 80s or 90? No, 90, I can't remember what it was now.
It was late 80s, maybe 88, 89, something like that.
Yeah, I think
that.
You're right.
So that was my first one, but yeah, no, then from then on, it was a funny one because my dad would often do working weekends, so we couldn't really get a season ticket. We ended up kind of having people in the family would use their season tickets and stuff like that. And yeah, but we got to our fair share. But yeah, that 2002 was the last one, and very unremarkable in any other way, pretty much.
Well, no, it's a very nice reason to have it. Now, being a Spurs fan, at what stage did you say to yourself, "Oh my God, I'm now writing professionally. I'm being paid now to watch Tottenham." I know before Football.London, you worked for various local papers in the area. Yeah. So when was it when you covered professionally your first Tottenham game, and what was that like?
Well, funnily enough, that's in my list.
Oh, is it? That
You are preceding one of my.
I'll keep the powder dry then. When it crops up, it crops up then. That's fair enough. I didn't know if it was in here or not. Well, let's go for the next one that a lot of people remember, but so far, no one has put this in their list. And this was a great game. Great memories. We hadn't beaten them for so long. November 2006, Tottenham 2, Chelsea 1. We were a goal down. Let's listen to the two goals now.
Yeah, he's got a longer period of the game to survive any other clumsy challenges. Great header and a terrific goal from the centre-back. Dawson with a perfect header that any striker would be proud of.
Goalkeeper afraid of anything going towards his near post. Perfect connection from Dawson. It's a flat ball, it's a good ball from Genus. Drogba can do nothing about it, and nor can Ilario.
Robin's layoff. Not the best return ball. Chimbonda got it clear, only just though. King loves drifting out to this left-hand side. And he's now saying, look, I've got no options. Cleverly beat Boularouz. Tough character, the Dutchman. You don't get around him easily, but he has, with a great bit of skill. And Lennon with a chance. Will this finally be Tottenham's day? 16 young years they've waited to beat Chelsea. Is the wait over? I wonder.
Brilliant finish from little Aaron Lennon, who hasn't seen an awful lot of the ball, but he had the presence of mind and the composure to tuck that one past Ilario and put Tottenham in front.
The last Tottenham Hotspur player to score the winning goal in a league game against Chelsea was Gary Lineker. Lampard couldn't find Robin. And all the time they're pouring men forward like this, Chelsea, they're in danger of conceding on the break. John Terry's in danger of a yellow card.
That's a great one. This was also the game with the famous Ledley King tackle, wasn't it, when he ran back?
It was. Arjen Robben, yes. It was one of these for me that just absolutely stood out. It's one of the few on the list that I wasn't actually at, which, so for it to actually still make the same impact despite not being there, probably says as much about it. And again, there's a little bit of a connection there for me, is because I don't know if people know this or not, but before I started writing about Spurs week in, week out, I wrote a couple of books. And one of those was about Martin Jolt. So I kind of, in doing so, got quite a close connection with Martin and his family. And for me, this is one of the, we've got two Martin Jolt matches on this list. And for me, this was the one where I think he kind of really made Spurs fans believe again.
And I think absolutely right.
Destroyed that kind of hoodoo on that day. And it was Mourinho as well, wasn't it? It was Mourinho's Chelsea as well.
I think you might be right.
Yeah. And so, you know, and I mean, he taught Aaron Lennon to have a left foot. I mean, the goal was such
a great goal.
I remember he played him on the left, hadn't he? I think for a lot of that season. And he always said that was to make him more two-footed. And I remember the goal, he cut inside and used his left, and it just.
Yeah.
Everything about that game, like you say, the King tackle. For me, I'll always associate Martin Jolt with, essentially making the Tottenham Hotspur that we kind of see today. I know it's not great right now, but where we were as a club before Martin took over, I think he started those foundations.
It's so important to say that he absolutely did start those foundations. That's when we started getting better players in and going, and the football was exciting. That was the start of what then obviously happened with Pochettino. I think this is another Martin Jolt one, the next one. Again, this is on being on a few people's lists because just the manner of beating them. It was that famous game at Upton Park, March 2007. West Ham 3, Tottenham 4, as they were pushing for a much-needed goal because they're near the bottom. Let's all remember what happened when we broke up the pitch now.
The last throw of the dice. And Zamora's lost out here. Referee looks at his watch as he races forward. It's Jermaine Defoe, and he's got Lennon up with him, and only Konchesky to beat at the moment. Defoe! Oh, no! Unbelievably, it has been pushed out to Staltieri, and with seconds remaining, West Ham's fate might well have been sealed.
They lose the ball on the edge of the box, and in fairness to Tottenham, look how many white shirts break forward.
Were you that game? Were you? I wasn't at that away game. This is when I wasn't physically there.
I wasn't, unfortunately. No, we didn't get to too many kind of away games in those days. I just that's one of those probably biggest regrets I wish I was at, because I just remember going absolutely crazy in my living room at it. It was just it had everything.
Yeah.
It had absolutely everything, and I even remember the commentary. They were almost. I know there's this narrative about how no one wants Tottenham to win. And I kind of remember the commentary almost being like, it's like almost a disappointment. It's like, what?
Was it Peter Brackley? Was he shouts, oh no?
That was it. Yes, that was
it. Oh no. Exactly. He literally shouts, oh no, as we score.
And it was just, it had everything. It had that beautiful Berbatov free kick that in any other
match, a free kick.
You'd remember because, you know, even the header on the line couldn't get it.
It was like on a postage stamp. He had like this tiny, tiny gap to get it above the head and under the post.
Incredible. But still, everyone just remembers Staltieri. And it's probably, you know, he wasn't the worst player, he wasn't the greatest player, but he will always have that moment. And just watching him busting a gut to get up that pitch. And I just, honestly, it was a game. Obviously, the West Ham rivalry is a different one, isn't it? It's a very different one to the Arsenal and Chelsea one. It's always been, it's their cup final. I know that's used a lot and stuff like that. But probably that was the one match where it really felt like it was there. They put everything into that game. And for Tottenham to still nick it like that in the final seconds just kind of said everything about that rivalry back then.
Yeah. And also, and we'll talk about the famous last second goal later in our history. I don't think as a club we're known for getting many last minute goals. Arsenal, Man United, kings of the late last minute goal. I think generally Tottenham, I'm sure obviously we've scored quite a few and I can think of a few, but generally the great scheming thing is never one of these teams that would get that late goal.
100% agree. I think, to be fair, I think that was something Pochettino kind of brought. I think it was fitness. There was a kind of a mentality of kind of never giving up. And I think, like we said, I think probably Martin Joel started to put that belief in them. And yeah, and you could see them. They were beating the bigger teams. They were beating Chelsea. And then, yeah, and able to score last-minute goals at West Ham and things like that. And yeah, it's funny as a club. You're quite right. It wasn't really a thing. They were almost, yeah, the whipping boys. Always, it was, I hate to use the Spursy expression, but it is. There was more of a thought of how's it going to go wrong rather than how's it going to go right later. Yeah. And it just, yeah, it started to turn back then. And you know, I'll always look back and I think on the Martin Joel era with real regret as well in kind of what it could have been. Like I say, the only reason I mentioned the book thing earlier was that on the day Martin was sacked, I was actually with his family in the Netherlands. And we kind of knew something was going to happen. They were getting wind that they'd been speaking to him on the phone, I was with his brother, and you could tell something wasn't quite right behind the scenes. And just always that day, just always left a really sour taste in my mind and in my mouth because I could see what he did. I could see what he did. I never, ever sat right the way he was treated at the end.
I totally agree. It was another awful decision and treating by a club. I know his nephew very well, Robert, who obviously was at the club. Robert's a lovely man. Right, your next pick is one that would certainly be in my top 10 list. For me, this was one of the greatest glory, glory nights of White Hart Lane. One of the greatest atmospheres I've ever encountered at Spurs. It was that famous match, November the 2nd, 2010. Tottenham 3, Inter Milan 1. Let's remind ourselves of the Gareth Bale masterclass that night.
Trying to take charge again. Switches on the afterburners. Bale and tries to make it 2. Bale. Icon couldn't get close to Gareth Bale, and it's in again. It's Crouch again, but it's not going to count. It's Kabul doing the organising back there for Tottenham, and Gareth Bale's away again, flying forward, looked over his shoulder. Pavlyuchenko there to blunder, there to make certain of victory. Gareth Bale comes to the fore once again. Inter were threatening at the other end, but then Bale really upping the pace. Oh, that's what Bale is all about. And Pavlyuchenko sweeping it home with aplomb. Tottenham 3, Inter 1.
Presumably now, were you writing professionally yet at this stage on Tottenham, or what stage?
No.
Oh, still was, not? So you're still going as a fan?
I was still in my local newspaper days on right. This one. And this just, it was the Gareth Bale show. It absolutely was. It was, I had to write a piece a couple of years back on kind of, I think it was the anniversary came up. It would have been last year. Yeah, last year we had to do an anniversary piece on it, and just reliving it through writing it. I kind of had the goosebumps again, even just kind of playing it in my head. Just, you know, when you're kind of very fortunate sometimes to see someone become a star. And that was that night. It really was. He'd been amazing in the San Siro. He kind of had set it up. But I think that was the night, obviously, the taxi for Michael and all of that, when you just saw this guy that you knew could just reach the very, very top of the game. And he did, to be fair. He was unstoppable. He was Inter Milan, you know, some of the defenders, you know, Zanetti and people like that. And just, these are guys that have dealt with the best in the world. He was unplayable.
He was. And that last goal, Pavlyuchenko, yeah. When he just knocked it past and ran and crossed them. I was always a big Pavlyuchenko fan. I don't know why, but I just liked him. Something about him. Go and fucking run around a bit, as I read that famously said to him. But that was one of the great glory, glory nights at the Lane, wasn't it?
It was. It was incredible. Just the noise, the atmosphere was incredible. And you know, it was the era of Van der Vaart. And you know, with Redknapp, he was... I don't know whether it was because of the fallout from what had happened with Martin Joel. It was probably at a time when I wouldn't say I was a huge Redknapp fan. I wouldn't say I liked him. I think as a character, he was fantastic. I think for me, I was very much of the, well, if he had replaced Martin directly, probably no one would have accepted that. And I think I kind of always kind of kept that. But he won me over with kind of nights like that, I think. And you just realised how good he was with essentially attacking players mainly. And Van der Vaart, you know, it was just harking back to the Tottenham Hotspur of old. It really was. It was one of those players that made you think of the Ardiles, the Hoddles, the Villas and people like that. And just the love of the game shown out on the pitch. And I mean, you know, you look at the three goal scorers, you couldn't think of three more different players: Van der Vaart, yeah. Crouch, and Pavlyuchenko.
Yeah, that's true.
If anything, says everything about Tottenham Hotspur, the wide range of players that Tottenham have on a pitch. And I was a big Pav fan. I really was. He was just a striker. He was just put on there to score goals.
That's all he did.
When he was told to run around a bit, it's kind of like, I get it, because that's essentially what he does. There's no fancy side. He's not a Berbatov. He's not a great football player. He just went out there and just went out to score goals.
I think he's still playing in the Russian lower leagues last time I checked.
I wouldn't be surprised. I follow him on Instagram and you see some of the stuff. He looks exactly the same.
He hasn't
aged. But that night, oh my goodness. That was, you know, they were reigning champions as well, weren't they?
They were the holders.
I think it was Benitez, wasn't it, that year?
That's right.
Oh, it was incredible. It was incredible. It's just like we talk about European, you know, glory nights under the lights, and that's right up there for me.
It was electric. Now, your next pick, I'm assuming this is a personal one, because I had no memory of this game. And it was, even this one was difficult to find it. It was August 2016. It finished at Goodison. Everton 1, Tottenham 1. Eric Lamella got a rare league goal, and I'm sure all of you won't remember it. So just to remind you, here it is again.
Walker's cross. And it's touched in by Eric Lamella.
Now, this obviously must be a personal, professional reason why this goes.
This is my first ever game covering it as a sports journalist. This was the one.
So tell me how you got the job and what happened, and when they sat you down and said, this is what you've got to do, and you're trying to obviously play it cool, but you just go, yes, of course.
I mean, my background had been in news and then local sports news, and I kind of got to a position where by mid 2016, I was like the group sports editor for our company, and had a lot of newspapers that I was dealing with. And I was maybe slightly naughtily, but in a way also looking at us increasing our digital audience. We covered Cheshunt, that was one of our areas for the Hertfordshire Mercury. And I said to the powers that be, you know what? Spurs have now got their training ground, right, kind of on the border of Cheshunt. I think it would probably serve us very well to start kind of, we used to do it back in the day. They used to cover the Hertfordshire Mercury, used to cover Tottenham. I said, I think we should get back to that. Knowing with full well that I wanted to be the one that was going to cover them. So we covered them and Watford, and we started off kind of as the Hertfordshire Mercury for the first 6 months or so. And then without my knowledge, I wasn't aware at that point, they were kind of starting the process of beginning football.london, which was going to be this new website to cover all the London teams. And then very fortunate, Spurs were very good to us kind of as the Hertfordshire Mercury, as a local paper. They were very good with us, gave us really good access. And within 4 months or so, everything was going so well that the powers that be that were setting up Football at London said, do you want to just come across and just do this full time? And it was, like you say, it was sitting down one of those moments like, oh, duh, it was done. yes, please. And that was where it all started. And my first trip, although this technically was still while I was doing it for the Mercury, was going to Goodison Park, which is, it's kind of got White Hart Lane vibes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. That old type of ground. Yeah. And
massively. So to be sat in the press box, which is a very tight press box, very old school, and then going down for the press conference afterwards, it was, you know, it's cliched, but of course it was a dream come true. It was incredible. Yeah. And I remember telling myself kind of on the journey up, it was like, just don't punch the air if they score. Don't celebrate. Don't do anything you would have done as a fan, because previously I was covering non-league. I was covering League Two games where I had no real association with the teams. And I was so worried that I was going to come across as an utter muppet in the press box. And unfortunately, I think because I told myself so much not to do it, I didn't. And that's kind of probably where I still am today. You have these oh wow moments, but yeah, you kind of end up, you get not the passion beaten out of you. That's probably the wrong way to put it, but just that you have to be objective, I think. I think you have to be at the end of the day. But I love that game. I love that day, even though it was utterly non-remarkable. Other than I remember Lloris came off injured just before halftime. I think Vaughan came on for him. Oh. Lamella, who's always been a player of, I've always had a bit of a soft spot for, despite his injuries. because he's a bit of a nutcase, and I love that. I love risk takers. So it had that. It had Ross Barkley, who was a very talented young player, scoring the opening goal. It had Eric Lamella scoring a goal to level up. Vincent Janssen came on, made his debut.
Wow.
If I remember right, he had a really good chance to win it on his debut. And you kind of wonder, was that a sliding doors moment, you know? Had he done that, would we have seen a very different Vincent Janssen? It was just the whole element of stepping up into, you know, I suppose like the big time, really. Covering the Premier League match was, it'll always stick with me.
Yeah, that's lovely. Well, look, let's go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have your final five on Top 10 Tottenham. And we're back for the break. Now, this pick is absolutely up there. Before the break, we certainly talked about the Inter Milan match. This one was at Wembley, but without a doubt, when you say about Tottenham Hotspur arriving on the dining at the European top table, this was one. Let's listen to the second and third goal as we beat Real Madrid 3-1.
Now, what can Tottenham do here? Dele Alli away from Casemiro, and still. And the deflection! Oh, he's done it again! The deflection helps, there's no doubt about that. But Dele Alli is the talk of the town for Tottenham Hotspur. Here's Dele Alli off again, and now Harry Kane. Nacho, the last man for Real Madrid. Eriksen's on his way. Eriksen's onside. Eriksen, 3-0. They're in dreamland, Tottenham now.
What was your memory of this? This was an extraordinary night, wasn't it?
This for me was peak Pochettino. It was Pete Pochettino, it was Pete Christian Eriksen, Pete Dele Alli. It was just, you know, you sometimes have those evenings where just everything goes right and everything reminds you why a football club is great. And, you know, and sometimes with Tottenham Hotspur, especially with recent events, you kind of forget just what a great football club it was and what it can be. And I think nights like that at Wembley, and I think Wembley's kind of always got this bit of a reputation because of how wonderful White Hart Lane was and how much everyone was looking forward to the new stadium. Wembley's kind of frowned upon a bit in that period. But actually, Spurs adapted really well to Wembley.
We did. We started really badly there, didn't we, I remember. Then, but I quite enjoyed going there on the whole.
It's a bit of a trek. Of course it was. But I think in actual terms of the football Spurs played at Wembley, they really started to get at home. You know, you think of some of the big results. And
the Liverpool game. We beat Liverpool game, 4-1. Yeah. It was an extraordinary result. Yeah.
Exactly. And some of the games you get in the London derbies as well. It was superb. But for me, this one, it was, you know, a Ronaldo Madrid. And even not looking at the, obviously Eriksen and Dele scored and they were sublime. But even someone like Davinson Sanchez, who nowadays gets so much flack, that day, he was imperious. Toby Alderweireld went off. That was when he got his hamstring injury. It had been a back three. Alderweireld went off with that hamstring injury, which would keep him out for months. And Sanchez just kind of just was like a rock at the back. And Ronaldo got so little change out of him. And like I say, in saying that it reminds you of how good Tottenham Hotspur can be, I think some of the players, when you look at their current state, you kind of think, they were players, and Davinson Sanchez, you could see why he was a club record signing and stuff like that. And the noise inside the ground. And as a journalist, obviously, it was one of those where you feel an absolute privilege to be there and to cover it and to be able to write afterwards about how Tottenham not only, you know, beat Real Madrid, but trounced them. You know, it really was. It could have been more. They were just, everything that was good about the Pochettino Tottenham was on display. The aggression, the pressing, the counter-attack, just blistering counter-attacks. You know, we talk about counter-attacks under Mourinho, but this was a different beast. This was full of verve, and it was just exciting to watch. And yeah, for me, that night, November 2017, it was awesome.
That was a great one. Now, your next pick, again, is on many, many people's choices. I'm going to play the goals here first, and then Paul Coit's rousing words at the end as all the old great Tottenham players are on the pitch and all the legends. I'm of course talking the final game, the finale at White Hart Lane. Let's just remind ourselves now.
Eriksen with the corner, taking short. Davis picks a delivery, and it's a decent ball as well. Has been raised.
Eriksen drifted in all the way through. Spurs have doubled their lead and Harry Kane peels away, celebrating another goal. The free kick came in. Kane got the touch. He lost his man. Stuck out that foot. De Gea had no chance. And Spurs are heading for a second place finish in the Premier League.
As we say goodbye to our home for the past 118 years, let's celebrate the role that it's played in our lives. Generations that have watched games together in these stands, passing the love of this great club to sons and to daughters. The sights we've seen and the experiences we'll never forget. Finally, it's now time to say farewell to White Hart Lane, the world famous home of the Spurs.
This must have been very emotional for you. I mean, obviously, you're there professionally. You're writing on this thing. It was a big game. Man United, last game of the season. We finished undefeated that season at White Hart Lane. Again, we could have easily choked in that last game and most fans would have kind of gone, well, fair enough. I mean, all this going on. But what a day that none of us will ever forget.
It was incredible. Absolutely incredible. My wife always says I'm a bit of a robot. I don't have a lot of emotion. I don't show a lot of emotion. That is the closest I've been to getting very emotional at a football match. It was, like I've said before, you know, there's obviously the connection with my dad about White Hart Lane. Just everything on the day was so, it was like a Hollywood script. It was ridiculous. It was, you know, Harry Kane obviously scoring, fittingly. Even Victor Wanyama scoring. It was just like, what? Even Wayne Rooney, one of the stars of the game, scoring. Then the pitch invasion, which I actually remember, I have this memory of being kind of like almost annoyed when that started, because I was like, I've got to write stuff. I've got to write my press conference stuff. I want to do this. And then swiftly realizing, like, shut up, you fool. This is actually one of those moments that's incredibly memorable. Yeah. And I also have this, you know, you mentioned Coity there, and obviously I know you've done this with him already. My vivid memory is of him talking the fans off the pitch. Mm-hmm. People kind of, he was so instrumental. I think people forget that. He struck the perfect tone.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I said to him.
Yeah. He wasn't like, he wasn't patronizing. He wasn't annoyed with them. He understood completely why they were doing it. But he was saying, like, we've got so much more to give you. Come off and look at what's about to happen. And obviously, you know, the legends, you know, Ginola coming on after his heart problems. And it was just so many of the faces. And then you kind of, there was a tinge of, oh, it's pouring down. Poor guys are getting absolutely drenched. But you didn't realize that even that was to set up another kind of amazing moment, which was the rainbow. And it's just like, I'm sitting there writing like, if there was ever, I've never needed to be creative with my writing, it was that. It was like, you're doing it for me. Honestly, I say that privilege at the Real Madrid game, but that one, that for me was, I just sat there thinking, what an honour to actually be in this stadium. It, unbeaten season, like you say, it was just the pinnacle of everything. And, you know, you could see Pochettino tearing up on the pitch as well afterwards. It just shows how much that place meant to so many people. You know, even this random bloke in the press box, the fans, the players as well. And, you know, we're not there yet with the new stadium. Hopefully we'll be one day. But that day, I don't think anything can top that for the connection that the fans, the club, the stadium, everyone had together. I don't think Spurs have ever been since that as close as they were in that evening or afternoon.
Totally agree. Your next one, again, a moment in history. First match at a new stadium. It finished Tottenham 2, Palace 0. And let's just remind ourselves of the goals now.
Eriksen, one back of Milivojevic. Son, good opportunity here. Heung-min Son into the area. Surely, straight into the net. Can Minson write his name into Spurs history? Their first scorer at the new stadium. Relief all round in North London. And it's Tottenham Hotspur 1, Crystal Palace 0. He has scored some massive goals for Tottenham Hotspur, but the first at this footballing theatre will surely be one of them. It's a massive deflection off Milivojevic into the net, which took it around the goalkeeper. Spurs won't care one bit. They lead against Crystal Palace by 0-0. Heung-min Son does it for Tottenham Hotspur again.
Why'd you put that one in? The stadium itself is extraordinary. Talk us through the difference in where you were, the press area and everything, like how it's just gone up a level.
Yeah, but it actually quite literally has gone up a level. that's a really brilliant phrase you use. We used to be right behind the dugouts on the pitch, pretty much. We were.
Yes, I remember.
It was so in the action. It was brilliant, and you could hear everything the subs were even saying to each other and the manager was saying. But on the flip side, if the ball went in the corner of the pitch, you were stuffed. Couldn't see a thing. So now at the new stadium, we're up at a fantastic level. We can see everything played out in front of you like a tactical, kind of like a chessboard. It's an incredible stadium. I think my connection with the new stadium, obviously we know the corner of the old White Hart Lane was gone while they were building it around it. During that whole, probably 2 years before it actually was finished, I was doing all these weekly videos. I was going down to the stadium. I was doing live videos, talking to people involved in it. So it became not my baby, but I kind of got this connection with it as my stadium. The White Hart Lane was mine and my dad's. This was very much kind of my thing. I loved my technology, so I loved all the new side of it as well. And I think just that day for it to be finally opened, I actually had a complete and utter nightmare the day it opened. On the drive to the station to get the train, a white van at a roundabout hit me. So it went into my car. So I had this real kind of worry of, I actually didn't care about my car. I was like, I want to get this all sorted out. I want to get picked up so I can get to this train and get to the opening of the stadium I have spent 2 years or more obsessively covering like a nut. I got there in the end, and yeah, it was incredible. Obviously, the opening ceremony, I think they, a little bit like the closing ceremony, you know, I don't want to talk about other clubs and opening ceremonies and how some of them have been frowned upon, but I think Spurs,
West Ham Upton Park,
that might be the one I might be alluding to. But with Spurs and their finale and with the opening stadium, I think they just hit the note right. There was a community feel.
Exactly.
And it was so cool. And obviously the game itself was so nervy, but it was so noisy. I remember some of the players telling us afterwards that they couldn't hear a thing each other was saying. They were just kind of having to go on instinct. There was no communication. And I think for Sonny to obviously score in front of that, you know, ridiculous single-tier stand there, it's just like the noise. If it had a roof, it would have come off. It was just, you know, it was an incredible night. It wasn't the greatest game in the world.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't, you know, sexy football or anything like that. It was very much a case of please don't lose at the new stadium. Yeah. But it's just, new era starting that night.
Yeah, it was lovely. Now, your penultimate pick is obviously in everyone's, probably top one, I think, everyone had to choose a moment. And I will never, ever, ever, ever tire of introducing and playing this clip on every episode we do, because it deserves to be played. And it still gets me every time. Let's remind ourselves of that last minute or so in Amsterdam.
Batista licks away. Ben Davis with a tackle. Here's Son. Sissoko. Here's Dele Alli. Here's Lucas Moura. Oh, they done it! I cannot believe it! Lucas Moura with the last kick of the game. The Ajax players collapse to the ground. Tottenham Hotspur are heading to the Champions League final with a goal that we just couldn't believe. Jermaine Jenas is speechless. Ab- absolutely speechless. And so is everyone inside this stadium.
I can't believe it, Flick.
Referee's had a look at the watch. Don't know where he's getting the time from. There's Sissoko.
Get in the corner.
Down he goes. The full-time whistle! It's glory, glory, Tottenham Hotspur! In the most amazing Champions League semi-final that most of us have ever seen.
Even Harry's ankle's looking all right all of a sudden.
History made in Amsterdam by Mauricio Pochettino and his players. It's the greatest night in Europe for 35 years since the days of Huddle and Ardiles, and maybe the best of all time. It's what Champions League dreams are made of. It's a night these players and supporters will never forget. Tottenham Hotspur have come to the Netherlands and reached the promised land.
What was this like? Presumably you were there. Were you there professionally? Because so many fans couldn't get tickets and travelled without tickets and watched in bars. So what was it like professionally going there? We were goal down, two down at halftime, effectively 3-0 down with 45 minutes to go. Presumably you'd already started making some notes as you go through your match report. It probably didn't really sound very good. Did you see this happening?
No, not at all. Anyone that said they would be utterly lying.
Some people left at half-time, I know. Some people just went, sod this. I mean, let's go to a bar now. This is ridiculous.
In a stroke of luck, my hotel that I was staying in was attached to the side of the stadium.
Oh, okay. So
there was no need for me to go because I would only been walking around the corner anyway. But it was, oh my goodness. I mean, the best way to describe it was, I've never been as happy to be involved in such utter chaos that destroyed a match before. Honestly, it was just, and we had the added element in the press box of we had loads of Ajax fans up above us behind.
Right.
So first goal Lucas got back, it was a bit like, there's your consolation.
Polite applause.
Exactly. Second goal went in, they went mad. They threw all their beer down on top of us. So my laptop started to go absolutely crazy. I had various keys wouldn't work anymore, which obviously, when you're covering one of the biggest games in your career, is not the greatest thing. And I don't know if you'll mind me naming you or not, but poor Jason Burke from The Telegraph, who sat opposite me, his laptop died.
Right, yes, I heard these stories. Yeah,
absolutely died. So it was like, okay, right, we've got to figure a way around that while watching this incredible match. But still at 3-2, you're still like, oh, it's probably still not going to happen.
Yeah.
And then the third goal goes in. And
you must have lost it then. You must have lost it as a fan.
I remember what I shouted.
You couldn't just sit there and not do anything.
I remember what I shouted, wow, really, really loudly. And that absolutely brought an even bigger torrent of beer down. So any keys that probably were left that were barely working, they died. And I ended up having to go down to the press box. The press area underneath and like drying off my keyboard. But it was... Oh, honestly, just trying to, even looking back now, I watched the videos. Obviously, everyone watches them on Twitter and all of that. And you're transported there immediately. Mm. It's got to be, obviously, everyone will say, and those who, of course, we want silverware and everything, but those who look back will say it never resulted in the thing. They went to Madrid and it didn't, you know, I could have easily.
It doesn't matter. I don't think it matters.
It doesn't to me.
We'll always have this moment. We'll always have this night in Amsterdam.
Yeah, exactly. I Madrid was an incredible experience, but just was an utter damp squib on the day. Yeah, I could have put Man City in that as well on the road there.
Yeah.
But this game, you know, I spoke about the Hollywood script for the final game at White Hart Lane. This was like, you know, those goal movies they made back in the day. This was like someone had written one of those. And, you know, Lucas, I like Lucas. I think he's a lovely guy. He's got a lot of attributes to him. I wouldn't say he's probably the greatest player to ever have graced the turf for Tottenham Hotspur. But what I will say is he gave Tottenham fans a moment they'll never, ever forget. And obviously I didn't get to experience the incredible commentary either. When I got out and I actually watched back the commentary, I was like, I kind of wish I'd had that in my ears while I was kind of watching.
Yeah.
And I had a very strange moment with Jermaine Genus afterwards. We both go in our very separate ways, TV, and I think he was actually Yeah, so he was doing the TV co-punditry, wasn't he? He was there with
BT Sports.
Was it Darren Fletcher, I think he was with? Yes. Yeah. And we kind of just passed each other as I was going to the press conference. And I don't know Jermaine Genius. I'm not trying to claim I know him in any way whatsoever. But I think we were in both such a daze. I just looked at him and I just said, that wasn't too shabby at all, was it? And he went, it really wasn't. And we were just kind of in the stupor, both walked off in our separate ways. It's the only time I've ever spoken to him and maybe ever will. But we were just united in a moment of, obviously, him as a former Spurs fan. He's clearly very fond about the club. Me with my background as a Spurs fan. And we were just like walking in a dreamland. And to go down to the press conference afterwards, where Pochettino was clearly so emotional.
Yeah,
and he was, it was everything you could possibly want in a match happened. Drama on the highest scale possible.
But also you must get the other journalists with you week in, week out, the ones you're friendly with and chat to and hello. They all know you're Spurs. So they're there professionally. I mean, even if you weren't Spurs, you would have lost it. But they must have been that feeling for you being there with your peers and all these other people. But no, this is my team and we've done it.
There is. Of course there is. I utterly try and be as professional as possible. I always strive to be. But of course, there's a bit in you. To say my heart wasn't pumping like a million beats a minute, it was like coming out of my chest. It was incredible. And, you know, I use the word privilege so much, but to be able to write about that and the aftermath, you know, obviously I don't think I flew back till later the next day. So all the next day having to write about a match like that, you know, you think about the aftermath of Madrid when, due to circumstances, we had to stay there another night and kind of with all the Liverpool fans celebrating and having to write stories about what was kind of pretty much the breakup, the kind of death throes of that Pochettino team. But in Amsterdam, it was writing about the promise of everything was so different. It was like, wow, what could happen next? You know, we know what happened next, but in that moment, you just couldn't beat it. It was incredible.
Yeah, it was. Oh, it was lovely. And then your final pick, and I think so far the shows we've done, you are the first guest to have a game under the Jose Mourinho regime. But in saying that, you picked a corker that, because of everything that happened Mourinho in this season and COVID and no real fans there and all that, it's kind of forgotten about. But this was an incredible performance. It was, of course, Manchester United 1, Tottenham Hotspur 6, October 2020. Let's remind ourselves of the goals now.
Here is Eric Lamella, and it's forced in for the equaliser. What an amazing start we've got at Old Trafford.
One header, two header, three headers, four. And in the end, it looked like even Maguire pulled Shaw back so he couldn't clear it cleanly.
Here's Son. He's in. And Tottenham are in front.
Brilliant from Kane. Absolutely fantastic. The touch is wonderful. He's gone down.
Anthony Taylor has got something else to deal with.
He's gone down. It's a red card. Soft. It's soft. I don't think there's much difference between what Lamella does and what Martial does. I think the forearm into the face or chin.
And Harry Kane makes it 3-1 now. It's falling apart for Manchester United here. Half an hour gone. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer have to reorganise his depleted team. And in goes Son. It's four. In the 37th minute.
Well, this day had danger written all over it. And it just got really, really bad for Manchester United.
Ndombele. Højbjerg inside to Pogba. It's Aurier and it's five. 50 minutes gone. They are depleted, Manchester United, but they were sliced open. The quality of Tottenham. And it gets better and better for Jose Mourinho. Spurs flooding players forward. Still Davis. Comes back to Dele Alli and Spurs get a penalty.
He was at fault for the fifth goal. He didn't stay with his runner. He's now given away a penalty.
So this to hit Manchester United for six, which he does, Harry Kane.
So why did that one go in? This was quite a performance.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be completely honest. I didn't have a Mourinho game on my original list. And I looked back over it and I thought, you know what? That's not fair. That's not fair, because whatever you think of Mourinho, whatever you think of the football that was played, there were some moments. And for me, this was a big moment. Yeah. It was a real... There was the script. It was going back to Old Trafford. It was his old thing. It was Tanguy Ndombele, I think, stepping up really for the first time properly as well against big players. You know, obviously they had the player sent off with Eric Lamella's involvement with Anthony Martial, which was dubious. But still, even by that point, Spurs were on top and you could see where they were going. And Mourinho is a funny one for me. I can understand why a lot of journalists that worked with him in the past probably weren't the biggest fans. But I've got to admit, he was always very good to me. He was very good. He was very forthcoming. His answers were always interesting. He would go into stuff in detail with me. So I never really had any issues with Mourinho as a person, because obviously you can only take people with how you see them and how you get them. And I think, got to be completely honest, a lot of the football we were served up was pretty bad. It was, as a journalist, it was very much, you could have written your match report before the match. You knew what was coming. We were always told
a lot of cut and paste.
Exactly. We were always told in journalism school about one particular reporter who, back in the days of typewriters, would get out his pre-written forms and just fill in the names. Wow. And that was Mourinho era a bit for me. But this one was different. And it was, you know, Son and Kane were incredible. And even the Serge Aurier goal, Højbjerg's pass.
Great
was
finish.
It was just dissected the United defence. It was incredible. And I just think, it's almost a match that sums up what could have been under Mourinho had he just let the shackles off more often. Yeah, he had incredible players.
Who wanted to play for him. I mean, I think all these players, absolutely, who wouldn't want to play for Jose Mourinho at this stage?
Exactly.
That's the frustrating thing, that he didn't tap into that goodwill that he had with the players and go, as you said, with Redknapp, express yourself, go out, be who you are. I'm not going to change things. You do this, just go and do it. Yeah. That's the frustration.
Agreed. I think his kind of almost his biggest failing was that he wanted the defence to work, even though he could see it wasn't. And he kept trying to work on that defence, pack numbers in front of it, protect them. When actually, had he played to the strengths, like you say, I mean, Kane, people talk about Pochettino and Kane. Some people even say Tim Sherwood and Kane. Mourinho got more out of Kane than any of those managers. And that's, you know, he said we all saw it in the Amazon documentary, I'll make you explode and all this sort of stuff. Yeah. He did. And you do wonder, and even Son had his, arguably, certainly for maybe half to three quarters of last season, his best time as a Spurs player. I mean, there are other matches I could have put. It was a lovely experience going to Marine in the FA Cup under Mourinho. Mm-hmm. That was amazing experience seeing... Back to my non-league roots and seeing the way they reacted was beautiful. But for me, as a game that, kind of summed up what Mourinho's era could have been, I think that was the one. And Old Trafford, I know it was an empty stadium, but I think it would have been silent otherwise. It really was. It was an incredible game. Absolutely amazing.
Well, that's lovely. That was a wonderful, wonderful top 10 Tottenham. And now, Alistair, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
The Kings of White Hart Lane. Top 10 Tottenham!
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at spursshow.net.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.